Well, good morning. We are in the book of Daniel. Perhaps for the last week, at least in the context of going through the book, we're going to finish chapter 12, verses 5 through 13. Got a little review here to remind you of certain things here. First one is this, chapters 10 through 12, three chapters record one event, the appearance to Daniel of the angels. It's pretty much chapter 10 and his response to that, and then chapter 11 is a long chapter that gives the prophecy and goes into chapter 12, and chapter 12 concludes it. But we saw in chapter 10 that Daniel had trouble keeping his composure as he meets and talks to and is revealed to him the person who is speaking to him. Chapter 11, we see the prophecy of the world from the time of Daniel until the end of time. The first 20 verses of chapter 11 gave us a preview of a whole lot of detailed events that will transpire from Daniel's day up until the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. And we looked at those. If you remember, I showed you or had a comparative chart there, showing you the text, the statements from the text, and then showing you some events that took place in history that I'm not authorized to say that dogmatically that definitely is a fulfillment of it, but it's hard to miss a lot of that you see there. Chapter 11, verses 21 to 35, continues with the details of the reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. And then we come to verse 36 that continues talking about Antiochus, but it appears to be a little different. We talked about that. Some people think that this is a continuation of the history of Antiochus. Some I think it's there's a big gap there, and it's going forward toward the end of time and talking about the Antichrist. I told you last week that I'm of the persuasion that it doesn't have to be exclusively one way or the other. I think that it appears to be a melding or a blending or an overlapping, a meshing together of both of those things. In the same verse, you can see a phrase that obviously seems like points to the Antichrist, and then the next phrase may not so much do that, and it looks more like Antiochus back in the 100-200 B.C. so you can see those things, especially when we get to chapter 12 and verse 2, where it says, "Many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt." To me, without a doubt, that seems to be a reference of the coming judgment at the end of time. So we are there, and we saw in verse 4, the end of the last verse we looked at last week, where the messenger says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the end of time. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." Then we get to verse 5. It says, "Then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the other on that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen, who is above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be?" Let's stop there and look at what we're reading here. Verse 5 says he sees two others. Two other what? It doesn't tell us specifically in this verse. The implications are, to me, two other things, and I'm going to use the word persons, two other persons similar to the one he's been talking to. All right? And one's on one side of the riverbank, one's on the other side of the riverbank. Well, what river is this? And then we see that one of those two men asks a question to the third man, who says that he is clothed in linen and he's above the waters of the river. All right, so Let's go back to chapter 10, if you flip back there. And we'll see that we have seen this man before. Well, let's start reading in chapter 10, the very first verse. The third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. So we see Daniel's, what's the background of what's fixing to happen here. Then verse 4 says, now on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris. So here we've got a river and we've got it named, the Tigris River. He says, I lifted my eyes, verse 5, and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. Okay, so here is this man. And they go on, and this man begins to speak to Daniel and to talk to him, and Daniel can hardly take the appearance of the man and the conversation. And so it doesn't tell us exactly who this man is. We know it's not Michael because in verse 13 he says that Michael came to help him. Okay, some people think that perhaps it is an appearance of Christ, but I don't think that's very likely myself because you can see in verse 13, the prince of, let me read verse 12, then this man said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. So here you got the apparent scenario of this, whoever this man is, needing help. He can't withstand the demonic angels, would be my explanation of that, that are coming against him to try and prevent him from coming. And I don't, it's hard for me to believe that that's Jesus. I never saw in the New Testament Jesus having any trouble handling demonic beings. So that's my take on that. So here's this man, but this is that man. So this man talks all the way through chapter 10 or the rest of chapter 10, all of chapter 11, and at the beginning of chapter 12. All right? So here he is in verse 5. Daniel looks. There's two other angelic beings, I take it. One on one side of the Tigris River, one on the other side of the Tigris River, where Daniel has been in that vicinity listening and hearing and seeing perhaps this prophecy. And one of the two that are new on the scene, at least to us, ask the man in the on the above the river. All right, and someone might question, oh, how is he hanging up there above the river? Because he's an angel. All right, angels don't have any problem doing that. Okay? All right, so he's there. And one of these other two ask him this question. How long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? So there is the question. So, the man who is above the waters, clothed in linen, verse 7, he holds up his right hand and his left hand to heaven and swore by him who lives forever. Now, who would that be? God. All right? Let me give you a little reminder of what we have seen over the years about swearing. When a person swears, that's a common thing that we just kind of do or see people do, and they give no thought to what they're doing. They just say, oh, I swear, you know, or I swear to this or I swear to that. What does it mean to swear to something? Of course, the most common thing that people swear to is God, isn't it? I swear to God. What is that? We take that so lightly. All right? What is happening there may not, maybe that happened in your mind because you don't even think about this, but here's the origins of swearing. When you swear, when I tell you something, and I tell you this statement, and you don't believe me because I'm a habitual liar, and so you don't know whether to believe what I'm saying or not. Or maybe I'm not a liar generally, but it just seems so hard to believe. All right, to encourage you, to convince you to believe what I'm saying, sometimes I will swear. And I swear to someone else. You can't swear to grandma's grave. You can't swear to the temple. You can't swear to the gold on the temple. You have to swear to someone who is able to back you up on your state. And more than back you up, we swear to God. And what we are saying is this, because swearing has not just the statement, but it has a built-in penalty if you are found to be lying. So when we swear to God, here's what we're doing. We're saying, I call upon God, the most supreme being in all of the world, who knows all things, who can see all things, knows my thoughts, can read my thoughts. He knows whether or not I'm telling the truth. And I call upon him to acknowledge that what I'm telling you is true. And if I am not, may he damn me. That's pretty heavy, just go around spouting off words, isn't it? Okay? Now, probably a lot of you who may casually use that word never thought, and never, maybe you would say to me, I don't mean that when I say that. I understand. But you need to know the origins behind what this is. So here's this angel in the river, and the guy asks him a question. He says, how long will it be till all of these horrific things that we have seen will be? And the angel, he's been telling him all these things here for a while. But at this point, he stops and he lifts his hands to heaven and calls upon God. He swears by him who lives forever. And then he gives the answer in verse 7. That it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. What is that? We've seen that before, haven't we? Back in chapter 7, we saw those three words. And by far, the most common explanation of those is time is a year. For a time, that's one. Times is two. And half a time is, so that would be three and a half total. You get it? Time, one, two, and a half. Total is three and a half. Almost need a calculator to figure that out, right? Three and a half. So he says it's going to be for 3.5 years. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. Now, the question that I had at this point is, first of all, I mean, I understood the time and times and time and half a time, the 3.5 years. But when did this 3.5 years begin? He doesn't tell us here in these verses. Now, I want us to look. We didn't take the time to do this back in chapter 7 when we're going through it, but we're going to take just a few minutes to look at the other places where this period of time is used. If you flip back to Daniel chapter 7, we're going to see the first one. Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. I'm going to back up to verse 24. This is an interpretation of a previous vision that Daniel had. Verse 24, the 10 horns or 10 kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And another shall rise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. He shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, shall intend to change times and laws. Then the saints shall be given into his hand for a time and times and half a time. So here we see the record of some man or some king that comes along, and he is able to subdue a large number of people, including the saints, it says, will be given into his hand for time, times and half a time, or 3.5 years. We saw that back in chapter 7. Now flip it back over, if you would, to the book of Revelation. We're going to see the other two or three places that this phrase is used. We're not going to go into great detail at each one. Revelation chapter 11, first three verses. This is the Apostle John. He says, "Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod. The angel stood, saying, 'Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar and those who worship there. But leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it. For it has been given to the Gentiles, and they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. All right, so 42 months, 3.5 years. We're using 360-day years as they were used in that time and in the scripture record as well. So here we see again this 3.5 years. Here it's labeled or spoken of as 42 months. And you see the one event in that verse that he talks about that's concerning those 42 months is a bad event. They will tread the holy city underfoot. All right, so again, just like we saw in Daniel 7, it's something horrific that is and catastrophic and terrible that's taking place, and it takes place for 42 months. Verse 3 of Revelation 11, "And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth." So this period of time is labeled three different ways: 42 months, 1,260 days, and a time, times, and half a time. So we're going to see that phrase yet two more places we're going to look at. Look at chapter 12. Look at verse 6. Here we see the symbolism of a woman who is a pregnant woman about to give birth to a child and is being driven into the wilderness because she's being hunted down to be killed, or at least the child that she will bear. And you see in verse 6, "Then the woman fled into the wilderness where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So here the same time frame, and you see again a bad situation that precedes this. This woman is being hunted down to be killed. Okay, you go on over to the 13th chapter and verse 5. Again, I'll back up to verse 3. Chapter 13, verse 3. "I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, 'Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?' And he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven." So again, we see this period of time of 42 months in reference to this beast who is given authority, it says. So you're going to see that he's got the upper hand over someone or some group of people or something. And this oppression that he oversees, that he is in charge of, that he authorizes, lasts for 42 months. And that doesn't give us a whole lot of detail about what all this stuff is. But what I want you to see is these things, I am persuaded, are obviously connected. This 42 months you see in chapter 13 is the same 42 months or 1260 days that you can see in chapter 12, the same 42 months that we can see in chapter 11, the same 42 months or time, times, and half a time that we see in Daniel chapter 7 and in here in Daniel chapter 12. Same thing. All right, you may could, I'm not sure I can, take all of those things and piece all the details together and come with something a little more meaningful that I'm going to give you today. Okay, but I'm just hard for me to do that if I'm not convinced of it, if I'm not certain. And it takes a lot of studying, years of studying, to be able to say some things with certainty about these things. So, here's we are, verse 5 and 6 and 7. Daniel is on the bank of the river. He sees two other angels that are talked about now. We don't know if they've been there all the time or what, but here they are. And the third angel, the one that's been talking to Daniel all this time, is above the river. One of the other angels asks the speaker, the angel who's speaking, "When will these things be?" And the speaker, the angel, swears before God before he answers. And he says it will be at the end of 3.5 years these things will have taken place. Okay, we don't know. Doesn't tell us when the 3.5 years began. All right. My guess, this is just my guess, is that it takes place, they begin at the start of chapter 12, verse 1. At that time, Michael shall stand up. All right, in chapter 11, the end of chapter 11, he has been talking about a lot of horrific and terrible things and persecutions and death and all these things that's going to take place. That, remember, we're talking about these things are kind of, they might be in Antiochus' day or they may be in the future toward the end of time. And in the midst of all of this discussion of these terrible things that's going on, we come to chapter 12 and it says, "And at that time, Michael shall stand up." Who is Michael? He's an angel that is, we can see that he is involved in these events back in Daniel's day. And apparently he's going to be involved in these events right here at the end of time. We could have saw that in Revelation chapter 12 that he's mentioned there as well. "So at that time, Michael," it says, "shall stand up. The great prince," you see in Revelation 12, 1, "who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as was never seen since there was a nation even to that time." He says there's going to be a time, that the time that Michael stands up is going to be the beginning of a time of trouble like the world has never seen. It says, "At that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who's found written in the book." And then he talks about the resurrection of the dead and the resurrection of the saved. So my theory is that 3.5 years he's talking about begins at that point. It is not at the beginning of all this terrible stuff. It's somewhere in the midst of it. And here it intensifies, it seems to me, greatly. Okay, so if you look on the back page of your handout, Daniel seems to repeat this question. See in verse 8, Daniel says, "Although I heard, I did not understand." You ever had that experience? Of course, all of us have. All right? And that can happen in several ways. Even in your home, between two people in a home, someone can hear and not understand. Someone can say they hear And they don't know the answer because they really weren't listening. All right? So this comes about a lot of different ways. This reminds me that the event here and back over in chapter 10. Reminds me of the time of when the Apostle Paul was on the road to Damascus. And I think John may have talked about this a little bit during his sermon there on chapter 10, where Paul, or his name was Saul at that time, saw the light, you remember? And what he saw was different than what the people who were with him saw. Now you go back and read the account. Two different things. The same thing is going on, but it's perceived two different ways. One way by Saul and one by the people who are with him. And I'm not sure what Daniel means when he says, although I heard, I did not understand. I assume he means he heard the question, he understood the question, and he heard the answer in plain English. Obviously, wasn't English, right? But we would say that. He understood what the guy said, but he didn't comprehend what it meant. Now, I'm not sure what he didn't understand. I guess it ought to be, because I don't understand it either, what he said. But it wasn't just that he gave them a time period of 3.5 years. But the time, people, was to the power of the holy people has been completely shattered. All these things will be finished. Daniel hears that, but it's, you know, sometimes you hear something and you don't quite understand it, you don't follow it, and so you ask another question. Except it looks to me like Daniel doesn't ask another question, it looks like he asks the same question. Now, I've tried to make this a different question, I've tried to look at it different ways and make this a different question, but I'm having a hard time making that a different question than the first question that was asked. In verse 8, he says, although I heard, I did not understand. Then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? Okay, now you might could put a little different perspective on, a little different spin on it to make it say something different than the first question. But to me, it looks like the same question. All right? And here's one reason I think it is the same question. It's because the guy gives him pretty much the same answer. He gives him the same time period again. Look in verse 9, and he said, the messenger said, go your way, Daniel. Excuse me. For the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified and made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. And none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. So he gives him, it appears like the same time frame, same time period. We're going to get to that. I know some of y'all already know it doesn't say the same. We're going to get to that in a minute. But the same thing there. All right, so it seems like he's saying the same deal. But let's look at what all this says. If you want to follow kind of on your outline, you see, he first tells Daniel, go your way. Go on about your business. The explanation of all these things that we just looked at won't be given to you. And they won't be given to anyone for a long time. Many people, he gives them a little more detail, will understand and be purified, made white, and refined. That obviously to me is a reference to someone who is converted, someone who God has regenerated their dead heart, and they are alive in Him. He says that the unbelieving, wicked, will continue in their wickedness, not able to understand. You know, we can see in the book of Revelation, and we may talk about this a little bit later, maybe not, but toward the end of Revelation, when God is pouring out His wrath upon the world. You know, when I was a kid, and I did something bad enough that my dad was going to whip me, after you get two or three whippings, you kind of know what they feel like, right? So you know what's coming. And I repented about as quick as I could, you know? Because I knew it was gonna be there until I yielded my will to him. In the book of Revelation, God pours out his wrath upon the world. And you would think, when things got bad enough, that people would acknowledge, okay, I give up. I've had enough. I'm sorry. But no. No. The wrath of God only intensifies their hatred for God. They curse him, even as they are being tormented with his wrath and his judgment. They curse God. Several times you can see that in the last half of the book of Revelation, where God's judgment comes down and they will not repent. They will continue being wicked. That's what this verse says. In verse 10, many will be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly. It's a continuous action. None of them will understand. None of them will even want to understand, will even care. But the wise will understand. Okay, he goes on and makes what appears to be, in these verses, a beginning point for that 42 months. Okay, so this is a little different. He's in verse 11. He says, from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days. So it looks like and appears like that he places a beginning point on these 3.5 years. Everybody with me? All right. So what is that beginning point? Well, he says it's the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away and the abomination of desolation is set up. One thing to notice, I think in every translation that I looked at, and some more free translations do not do this, so it may not be in every one, but you see in verse 11 that the word sacrifice is written in italics. Is it in italics in any of your versions? Okay, that is an indicator that word was not in the Greek language, but was put there to try to fill in the meaning. And that's a very common thing that happens in the Scriptures. Okay, most people who look at this, who I guess would be more lean toward the more literal side of interpreting the book of Revelation, interpreting prophecy, would take this to mean that the Jewish sacrifices are taking place. They're killing lambs and animals on an altar, and somehow this beast, this Antichrist, stops that at some point, and that's the beginning. Okay, I'm not hard-pressed to hold to that idea. Perhaps it's so, and that's fine with me if it is. It's not even nothing I can do about it either way, you know. But it seems to me that perhaps there is something going on there that this beast calls a halt to worship. Okay, Daniel may have saw that as a daily sacrifice while he was seeing in the temple. All right, all of us would acknowledge that if it means literally the sacrifices, there are going to be a lot of things have to transpire for that to even become capable of being done, and certainly it can be. All right, But my thought is this, that it's something, at least it is something that the beast causes the worship of God to cease. Maybe it's laws, maybe it's might. I don't know. But somehow that ceases, and in its place is the command or the willingness or something of people to worship something that is not God, in particular, this beast. Okay, now, we see that in verse 11 there. All right? So here, now we get to this one thing here. This is, doesn't say 1,290 days. It says 60 days. It says 1,290 days. We've talked about 42 months. We've talked about a time, times, and half a time. We've talked about 1,260 days. Here, when he gives this number, it's 1,290 days. Where do these extra 30 days come from? I don't know. And I read and read and read trying to see what other people say about it. And as far as I can tell, nobody knows. There is nothing. If you find something in the scripture that explains that, let me know and let the world know. Because everybody's missed it so far. All right, there's nothing there that gives us any indication of why this says 1,290 rather than 1,260. Now, there's a few guesses, all right? Some people guess that, and these are prominent people. They say, well, this is at the time of God's judgment, and that takes a little time, and it seems like 30 days would be a reasonable time for that to take place. Well, okay. If he'd have said 70, they'd have said the same thing, right? So, I don't know. It's just a guess. I mean, that's all it is people guess at what that means. Now, I'm not compelled to guess. All right, sometimes I'll give you an opinion, but I'm just don't know, and I'm not going to guess. But somewhere there's 30 days extra that's put in here. It's not just that. Go to verse 12. He says, blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days. So we're talking about 45 more days on top of the 30. What does that mean? Same answer. See the previous paragraph. I don't know. Nobody else knows. No one knows what this means. This is one of those things that God has sealed up in the book of Daniel, and it is still sealed up. You got that? It's not, we don't know. No one knows. I'm content to just let it go. Say it's there. Someday I may know. Someday I may not. But here's one thought that's included with that extra 45 days. He says there is a blessing that will come to the person who can wait for the extra 45 days. Now that's a hint. What is the hint to? I don't know. But he said, blessed is the one who waits, right? And comes to the 1,335 days. Now, verse 13 we're going to get to. Don't let me forget to come back to that. I want to give you just a few statements that are on the outline here of kind of where I am in my thinking. My thinking about prophecy and about end times will change every time I read a new book. Okay? That's just kind of the way it is. I can read a postmillennialist, and by golly, I'm a postmillennialist. All right? They can write convincingly. And sometimes, I may be getting to where I can recognize things that are assumptions that are made that somehow go from assumption to fact. that happens pretty regularly. Anyway, I'll give you some thoughts. First one is down here. I believe the 42 months. You see that about the fourth or fifth dot up from the bottom. I believe the 42 months that we've talked about here are real time. I believe they are 42 months. I believe there are 1,260 days. But I don't believe that anywhere in Revelation or here it is told to us specifically that we are able, will ever be able to know when that begins. God can allow this beast to take away the worship in the temple or take away our worship, and it be such a gradual process that we never recognize exactly when it happened. We may never know. No one may ever never know when that 3.5 years begins. Even if they are present in that time, God will know. It will be exactly 42 months, as he said, but no one may exactly know. That's what I suspect will be the case. Next statement I've got here is this: God will know, but events may be so chaotic and fast moving that the church cannot tell. If the church is still in this world, and you can probably gather that I suspect they may be from the way I'm saying this, the exact day will probably be the last thing on her mind at the time. I believe that the events of the last 7 years will be escalating at such a rapid pace that by the time God's wrath is poured out in judgment on the earth, it may only be a few weeks or days from the coming of Christ. All right, if you can look in the Revelation toward the end time there, where God's wrath is poured out, some of those things that if they are literal, and I tend to think they are, some of those things that are poured out, the earth cannot be sustained. This globe that we live on cannot be sustained if some of these things really happen. It's one thing for God to pour out famine. It's another thing for a third of the stars to fall to the earth, or a third of the rivers turn to blood. It's hard to live like that. And these things may be happening so fast and escalating so quickly that the people whose God's wrath are poured out upon are angry and they are lashing out in their pain and their fear to God, cursing Him. And all the time, this whole world is melting with a fervent heat. I'm going to look at our 2 Peter. If you want to flip there, you can. 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 to 13. But the day of the Lord, a common phrase in talking about the second coming of Christ, that time period. The day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire. The elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. And I'm not sure what that will look like. I know what it says. And it appears to say that this globe is going to be disintegrated. It's going to be vaporized. It's going to be gone. I've got a statement there. Global warming is yet to come. And it will be more than just a degree. More than worrying about the ocean rising 3 inches or whatever. Right? God's judgment will come upon this world. So what does he say? Very last verse of the book of Daniel. But you, Daniel, take this for yourself. I think that this is can be applied to us for the most part. But you, go your way. What else does he say? For you shall rest. What does that mean? You're going to die. They're going to bury you in the ground, Daniel. How do I know it means that? Because of the next phrase. And you will arise to your inheritance at the end of days. How would you like have God tell you that? John, go about your business. God is talking to me. How would you like to have that conversation with the Almighty God? Go on about your business. Conduct your life. Yes, you're going to die. But when you arise, you will arise to the inheritance that I have prepared for you. Let me tell you something. Daniel did not need some preacher to preach him into heaven. Go your way. Daniel was 80-something years old when this took place. 80-something, an old man. Hey, y'all are living in illusion. We've got a group of 5 or 10 people in this church that are within 3 or 4 years of each other, and they're around this. They're getting around that 80 mark, and I've noticed y'all are a little sensitive to that. But God tells us, go your way. Go about your business. And that's what the thought I want to leave you with this book. This has been a gripping book for me for the last 4 or 5 months. And God ends it telling Daniel and telling us. It is hard for me, you probably noticed this, to not apply a lot of these things to the world in which we live and the rapid pace at which evil is accelerating. It's hard for me not to talk about that. And here I go again. But God is telling us, go your way. Go on about your business. The righteous will be righteous still. They that love God will love God still. Let's go on about our way, walking with God, living for God. Whatever that the world may bring to us, whatever our lives may see, someday we will see our inheritance, just like Daniel. Let's pray. Lord, as we conclude this book, God, I know the thoughts that you have put into my heart, into my mind over the last 5 months, they may not be the same as what you put into some of these people's minds and hearts, but God, would you leave them there? Would you help us to remember them? God, would they change our life? Would they change the way we look at the world? And God, may our joy be increased. because we know you. May the evil that surrounds us and may be coming for us, may it not take away our joy. Amen.